The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
KNUS Denver, the voice of the people. News Talk 710. Put some attitude between your ears with Peter Boyles on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Morning, everybody. On a Wednesday, Cinco de Mayo, May 5, 2021, 710 KNUS, Denver's talk station. Weather right now is beautiful. 62 is the high, but allegedly rain comes this afternoon. Tomorrow's sunny and warmer. I've just been told we have one segment, which is all we're going to get. Professor, please say good morning and welcome to, although he was on a radio show on Saturday with Randy, Professor John Eastman. Professor, thanks for doing a radio show and good morning.
Well, good morning to you too, and thank you very much for accommodating my tight schedule this morning.
It's my pleasure. Now we have like 20 minutes. What would you like to say about what happened on the 6th and in the Oval Office and at Chapman University at CU? I'm stringing this together, but what would you like to tell the audience about what happened?
Well, you know, what happened was I was representing the President of the United States in the Supreme Court on one of the most significant legal issues to have come down the pike in a half a century. And as Chancellor DeStefano noted in his initial attack against me, you know, some lawyers in our law school were representing people in this litigation, and he praised them. But he found my support of the president repugnant. So it's hyper-partisanship. This is exactly the kind of thing that the First Amendment and academic freedom are supposed to protect against. And Chancellor DeStefano acknowledged that in his opening attack against me. He said that people have called on me to fire him. I can't do that. That would violate his First Amendment rights. But then they basically suspended me instead, which also violates my First Amendment rights. It's not as severe an adverse employment action, but is an adverse employment action. And so this is the basis of the lawsuit. We filed a notice of complaint against the university last Thursday, and we'll be proceeding after the statutory 90 days with litigation. I think the reason we're doing this is it's important to start pushing back against this effort to shut down any speech that people disagree with, particularly the herds that are now occupying higher education, all almost exclusively pretty hard left of center in the political spectrum.
What happened initially? I feel like I know you since I've been reading about you for about 3 days. You were a law professor at Chapman University in Orange, California, and the same kind of thing really occurred there. And you, if I'm understanding correctly, you walked away from that. Can you talk about that?
Well, I can. I can't talk about too much of the detail. They reached a settlement with me, by pursuant to which I retired. That's the language of this agreed upon public statement, and I can't go into the details beyond that. But I will say this: the level of hostility from faculty were putting immense pressure on the university to terminate me. And the president of the university there, quite rightly, said I have no grounds to do that. But the general counsel stuck into his statement. Unless he's convicted of a felony or disbarred. Now, I am 100% confident that none of my representations are remotely grounds for disbarment. But I also know that the California Bar Association has become hyper-partisan as well. And I wasn't willing to run that risk on behalf of my family. So when they put a settlement to early retire on the table, I took it. But that's a different dynamic than what went on at the University of Colorado. They just simply unceremoniously canceled my classes, falsely claiming, and I want to make very clear, as I said in the press conference last Thursday, what they claimed about this was a lie. They falsely claimed that they canceled my class as a routine measure because of low enrollment. Mm-hmm. That's a lie. My enrollments were at or above 120 other classes in the College of Arts and Sciences, and I'm not talking specialty externships or labs or anything like that. Lectures and seminars, 120 currently being offered this semester with lower enrollments than my classes had, and yet they canceled mine alone among those classes. So it's quite clearly tied to my political speech, and therefore it is an unconstitutional retaliation by a public university, and that's actionable. They did this without any notice, any opportunity for hearing. They claimed that I had no evidence for what I said on January 6th, and I spoke right before the president on the Mall on January 6th. They falsely claimed that I incited a riot, which is not true. And they did all this without any even bothering to talk to me, much less give me opportunity for a hearing and to explain my side of things. So that violates federal due process rights. And then, breach of my contract, defamation. They've said materially false things. And I think when you see the back and forth, that they qualify for malice, the malice standard, for bringing defamation claims as well. And I finally decided, not just on my own behalf, but on behalf of other professors and students who are just afraid to speak up, that I would sue, bring this suit to start pushing back against this kind of thing.
Since I've been reading about you, I'm sure you're more than aware of this, as I do as well, tons of critics. And they take back into time and they talk about whether your accusations about Kamala Harris, her qualifications for office, that this is the jumping off point for, not again, as just a reader. And I realize it's about the Chapman University, which obviously is off the table, but these people have a long running, and you're talking to a birther, by the way. I believe that Barack Obama's life story is a rigged story. I do believe he was born in Hawaii, but the rest of it is what it is. But is some of this about going back to what you said about Kamala Harris?
Well, of course, yeah. So what I said about Kamala Harris, and by the way, I didn't solicit news agencies to publish that piece. I was solicited to write that piece by Newsweek based on 20 years of legal scholarship I'd had about the original meaning of the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment. And I think it's not only fair to say that I'm one of the leading experts in the country on that issue, one of the few people that have read every word of the voluminous debates in 1868, and the Expatriation Act of 1869, the original Supreme Court cases dealing with this. What does the phrase the citizenship clause mean? Most people think it only means all persons born in the United States are citizens, but that's not what it says. It says all persons born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens. And so the issue is what the meaning of that second clause is. Did it mean mere territorial jurisdiction, such as you got to follow our laws when you're within our borders, or did it mean something more than that, what they called complete jurisdiction? And I think the evidence is just persuasive that it meant complete jurisdiction. Anyway, that was 20 years of scholarship.
Well, I'm not throwing rocks. I'm looking. Professor John Eastman is with us. And, I know that we're not going to talk about it, but the Chapman stuff, at least what's on the Internet, who knows if it's true or not, they were loaded for bear on you prior to everything else. Is that fair?
Well, and that's fair, but so was Colorado.
Oh, sure.
We've now learned, because of his subsequent letters, that the dean at the law school prohibited me from teaching the seminar that I was supposed to teach at the law school because of this article. And I want to focus on Colorado here because the claims are that I made up this theory because I'm racist and don't like Kamala Harris. I mean, I've been publishing about this original meaning of the citizenship clause for 20 years. And what's most interesting is the application for the distinguished visitorship that I held at Colorado says they want somebody who's highly nationally profiled, nationally well known in both the theory and practice of conservative thought and policy. And my application focused on my work on citizenship clause. My job talk at the university, which was a public talk and recorded, and anybody could watch it. This was in November of 2019, long before Kamala Harris came on the scene. And so the notion that I made this up in response to her is just preposterous. And they knew it to be preposterous. And yet, nevertheless, when I faithfully applied that longstanding scholarship to the facts of on the ground with Kamala Harris, all hell broke loose.
I read the Newsweek. I read the Newsweek essay. I think you did it in 2020. If I'm wrong, I apologize. But I think you did a Newsweek essay that suggested that Harris was not a citizen. And I mean, believe me.
And I acknowledge, and I acknowledge in that essay that she was born in Oakland.
Yeah, right.
What I say is, under the original meaning of the citizenship clause, the issue is going to be what the status of her parents were. Mm-hmm. Were they citizens or lawful permanent residents?
A birthright of
She was born in Oakland. There's no question about that. But were her parents here mere as temporary visitors? Were they here on work or student visas? And the answer to that now appears to be yes. Mm-hmm. In fact, it looks like her mother was illegally present because she had overstayed her student visa. She received her degree in January of the year that Kamala was born. You have on a student visa 30 days to depart the country after the conclusion of your degree. Mm-hmm. And Kamala wasn't born until October, so long after the 30-day window expired.
And she's an anchor. I mean, that's called the people that...
Well, that's exactly right. And, and everybody wanted to avoid calling her the anchor baby because of all of that. But that's exactly what the issue is.
But that's what they do. I mean, the planes come in nonstop from Korea. They come over from Mexico in ambulances because they want the baby born here, granting that baby either in case of South
Whether
Korea.
Whether it's Russian tourism,
sure, of
birth
course.
Tourism in Miami, or Chinese tourism in L.A., neither one of them are compatible with the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, real quick, doctor, is she or is she not a citizen?
I don't believe she is.
Okay.
She was born while her parents were temporarily visiting here. However, our State Department has been acting as though mere birth on U.S. soil, no matter the circumstances, is sufficient. But they didn't start doing that until later in the 1960s, after she was born in 1963 or 4. I forget the exact year now.
I read the letters, and Chapman's off. I apologize because we've moved out of way. But, boy, they were after you. And it sounds like, to me, at first blush, Chapman is being repeated at CU. You settled at Chapman. Well, did they offer you cash at CU or money to get out of the blast?
Well, that would be part of the confidential settlement agreement.
Okay.
So
But at Chapman, there was a settlement that is not, I'm reading the outlet described an endowed professor, constitutional scholar, that ended as it ended. What was it like in the Oval Office that morning? You were there.
I met with the president and the vice president on January 4th in the Oval Office, and the president had been advised, based on law review articles that were done after the 2000 election, that in fact maybe the vice president had unilateral authority to determine the validity of contested electoral votes. And the vice president turned to me and said, "Do I have that authority?" And I told the vice president, I said, "That's an open question. But I think it's probably not the stronger of the two arguments. But even if you had that authority to exercise it in these circumstances, when none of the state legislatures had certified the alternate slate of electors, I think would be a foolish move." And I said, "I don't think you should do that, even if you had that authority." And that's an open question,
Professor. But wasn't that the setup to do that? I've read that Roger Stone and Bannon, Michael Flynn, who was retired, that were they all there? And I'm told that the vice president's aides were not allowed in. Is any of that true?
No, the vice president's aides were there.
They were.
In particular, Mark Short, his chief of staff, and Greg Joseph, his general counsel. Those are the only five people in the room.
That's
the president,
kind of
vice president, me, and then vice president's two aides.
Mark
Short, I believe, is the one that leaked the New York Times story that I had asked the vice president simply to unilaterally declare President Trump reelected. What I asked him was that you just delay the proceedings in response to the request from these state legislatures that said our votes were illegally certified because they violated our state law. Give us a week to try and determine whether those electoral votes are valid or not. And it was that request that he refused. It was not the broader request.
Why are we only concerned about those states?
What's that?
Why other states? Why are we only concerned with those states? And was Stone and Bannon and Flynn really there or not there? I've never been sure.
No, they were not there.
Okay,
I don't know where that came from, but they were not there.
It,
it was the president, the vice president, me, Greg Joseph, who was general counsel to the vice president, and then Mark Short, who was the chief of staff for the vice president. And by the way, I would normally not talk about a private conversation I had with a client, but I have expressed authorization from my client, the president of the United States at the time, to describe what occurred, to truthfully describe what occurred in that conversation.
So you leave the office on the 6th. Were you there when they drove over to the rally, or where were you?
Well, we had a war room at the Willard Hotel, kind of coordinating all of the communications. And when the president's arrival to the rally in front of the White House was delayed, Rudy Giuliani and I were asked if we would come on stage and say a few words. And so that's, you know, kind of filled the gap while people were still waiting for the president to show up. And that's how that all arose.
Who decided who spoke and what? In what order?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. Right. The rally organizers had a number of campaign and Trump family people that had been speaking all morning long, but then there was all of a sudden a big gap before the president was going to be able to arrive, and so I wasn't even the one that was asked. Word came down to the suite of offices where I was in. You know, could Rudy and I go over there and talk?
What were you watching and what were you thinking? And I've gotten some quotes that allegedly you have said. How much of this plays out into what happens?
Well, you know, I mean, so one of the things the university accused me of is inciting the insurrection or the incursion into the Capitol that went on 2 miles away. But by the way, that started 2 hours after I finished my 3 minutes of remarks. You know, to nearly a half a million people who had flown in from all over the country, not to hear John Eastman speak, but to hear Donald Trump speak. And the notion that I incited them to imminently go down to the Capitol and cause an insurrection is laughable. That would have meant that they would have left before they came to hear the main speaker they flew in to hear. It's laughable. But nevertheless, those were some of the accusations hurled my way. What I said was very straightforward. I said, we know for a fact, and it's admitted, that election officials in several of the key states altered or ignored their state election laws. That violates Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, which says the legislature has the sole manner for determining choosing presidential electors. And the second thing is, I said we know for a fact that we had traditional election fraud, like dead people voting. We've got sworn expert testimony in Nevada and Georgia with thousands of dead people who cast ballots. And I said, and what we also know, based on forensic audits, that the machines can be hacked and manipulated, and that in order to alter votes. And the experts that I had met with were with me on January 5th, saw it happening, what they predicted would happen. They saw it happening in real time in Georgia.
Well, Georgia is in all the things that I've read about. You said at that speech that Georgia had the secret folder, your choice of
secret
words.
Secret folder, and I've got the document.
Okay, what you said,
calls it a suspense folder.
Yeah, with respect.
What the machines are capable of doing is having ballots scanned and preloaded into a suspense folder.
There's been three counts. Is there proof of that? I mean, I've been over the internet.
No. You got to look. There's not been three counts. That's just a
well, they just
false
did a,
narrative.
Didn't they
put
do
out.
A hand? Didn't they do there a was, hand there, count? And didn't they?
No, there was one hand recount, but the hand recount was done by hand filling in what they call batch sheets. So you had two people counting ballots, and they fill in. So Biden gets 120, and Trump got 75, and Jorgensen got 5. And then they collect all those batch sheets, and they enter it into a computer. And lo and behold, the computer's running the same software that created the problem in the first place.
What we've
subsequently done is had a team down there in Georgia count all of the batch sheets. And the batch sheets, you know, hand-counted rather than machine-counted, come up hundreds of thousands of votes off of what the actual hand recount claims to have done.
That's a hell of a claim. Hundreds of thousands?
Hundreds of thousands. They actually counted all the batch sheets, you know, using just an Excel spreadsheet rather than putting the number of each batch sheet into a computer system that you never see the paper trail on whether the computer was actually tallying them the way that you're putting them in.
With total respect.
So the notion that there have been hand recounts to verify these elections is just a false story. And we really need to get to the bottom of it.
I agree with you, but I can't find anywhere, and I'm not a scholar, that there was even such a thing as the secret folders of ballots, the voting machines. I'm not looking for a fight.
I know, but I can tell you where it's got.
Okay.
So there's an affidavit filed in one of the Georgia litigations by the forensic audit team that looked at the machines in Antrim County.
Which team? So I can look when the show's over.
What they discovered in the materials they got was an actual manual from the machines that talks about suspense folders.
Well, What's the name of the team so I can hunt it up when the radio show's over?
Well, the head of the team was Russ Ramsfeld, Ramsland, and if you look at the team that conducted the Antrim County audit, that's the company's name. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the company right now. But you know, and then you look at the affidavit, the expert reports that were just submitted last week in the ongoing Antrim County litigation by Doug Frank, by Jim Penrose.
Ramsfeld, by the way, Ramsfeld is the guy. I know a little bit about this, and he's got one that got it all wrong in Michigan. It's the same guy, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, look.
He's a bad auditor.
The expert reports down in Texas that led mm-hmm. the Texas AG and State Secretary
but
no, of State.
Let's deal with Ramsfeld.
To decline to take those things.
Ramsfeld, in Georgia, rather.
Somebody got the wrong spreadsheet attached to their report. Hmm. They relied on Minnesota data rather than the Michigan data. I mean,
again,
you can understand how quickly these elections are being put together.
That was his mistake, Dr. Eastman.
I know that was his mistake. That doesn't mean that what they've said elsewhere isn't true.
I mean, I've never heard anyone say hundreds of thousands before till right now. How many did Donald Trump ask for when he asked for the fine? He didn't ask for hundreds of thousands.
Don't go down that path.
I'm sorry.
That is a false narrative. Donald Trump did not say, fine me 15,000 votes.
What did he say?
What he said was, and you look at the whole transcript.
Mm-hmm, I did.
So quit taking the bullet point.
I'm not taking.
Look at the whole transcript. The whole transcript says, we know there are 150,000 or more illegal votes that were cast. All I need you to do is identify at least 15,000 of them, and we win this election. That's what he said.
He asked them to find him votes.
No, he didn't ask them to find the votes. Right. He said there are 150,000 fraudulent. And just identify at least 15.
With respect,
this is the false story that's put out there.
Would you like to play the audio?
Yeah, play the audio.
Billy,
and don't take it out of context.
I'm playing you the audio, sir. I'm playing you the audio.
Look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state.
He's asking for it, sir.
You clipped it. You do the sentence before and the sentence after.
What's the sentence before?
What you just did is dishonest.
Huh.
Play the fuller clip.
Billy, can we have a full
he
clip?
He says, we know there are 150,000 illegal votes. All I need you to do is find 11,780.
But how do you know that, sir? How do you know that? How does Trump know that?
It's in the sworn expert reports that were admitted. It's in the analysis
from the bad people that voted on the out-of-state people.
And he said, of all of those different categories, I only need 11,000.
From the bad auditor.
No, it's not from the bad audit.
Well, you know that from bringing expert witnesses into a courtroom. Somebody would eat that guy up in a courtroom.
Tell me which one of the expert witnesses was rebutted rather than rejected without ever hearing it. Nobody wanted to hear it.
Right.
You asked me this question. Right. The main election challenge down there was December 4th. Mm-hmm. Election challenges in Georgia are supposed to have a judge appointed within 24 mm-hmm. hours.
Yeah.
30 days later, they still had not appointed a judge. We had to file a separate federal court action on New Year's Eve to get a judge appointed. The judge finally gets appointed on Monday, January 4th, and the initial hearing is scheduled for January 8th. Too late.
So,
and the case is dismissed as moot without anybody ever looking at the evidence.
I want you to stay. It's up to you. You were on stage with Giuliani, and Giuliani tells the crowd, let's have trial by combat.
No, I got it. I'm going to call you on every one of these lies.
Okay, so that's
what
a lie,
Giuliani
too.
What Giuliani said was, let me put it in context, because this is important. What Giuliani said is, I'm willing to stake my reputation that on the evidence we have, and I challenge anybody from the other side to try and rebut me. Let's have a trial by combat.
Right.
It was not the line to call on people to march down on the Capitol.
It was to go mano a mano against
whoever the Democrats wanted to put up to look at the evidence.
Look, I'm not blaming you.
Taking these lines out of context.
Eastman's on the stage when personal attorney Rudolph Giuliani tells the crowd, and the event ends, and some attendees go to the Capitol, and they disrupt the election certification process. Is that a lie?
Hang on.
Okay.
You've got the timeline wrong.
All right, there it
Rudy
is.
Rudy Giuliani and I spoke about 10:50 to 11 a.m.,
yep.
right? President Trump started speaking at noon. The crowd did not leave until Trump was finished at 1:30. The actions down at the Capitol began at 1:10. the crowd that was listening to Trump and that had previously listened to me and Giuliani were not part of that initial incursion.
I'm not blaming
you.
I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming you.
No, I know, but I'm just trying to get the timeline right here. Well, what you had is people from Antifa and a group called Oath Keepers of Ohio, who made the initial incursion in the Capitol at 1:10 p.m. while Donald Trump was still speaking
is
to
it
this
a lie?
Crowd of a half million people 2 miles away.
Professor, is it a lie when they say we only have one Antifa person, or were there more?
I think there were more. We have Twitter feeds with people being told, Antifa people being told, buy MAGA gear, infiltrate, and then cause as much disruption as you can.
Can they face ID? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about, you know, in terms of scholarship happened.
Let's go back to Colorado then.
All right.
Because
can you hang on?
I
really want you. You know,
I really can't. I've got a meeting I've got to run to. I'm sorry. I told them two segments. Most places do like a 10-minute segment. I told them I can get.
No, I want you for 2 days. Finish up. See
let's,
you.
Let's reschedule on Friday and pick up the conversation again.
Fair enough.
All right. Very good.
I'll put you on hold, Professor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. 303-696-1971. A professional appraiser for valuables tucked away in your basement, sitting on a fortune in cash, David Ellison, Cherry Creek, paying top dollar for diamonds and gold and sterling silver, wedding bands and Rolex watches. Get instant cash on the spot. David's been buying precious metals and antiques in Colorado for decades. David offers confidential valuations on estate sale jewelry, precious metals, coins, silver sets, and antique items. No obligation, free appraisals, private and confidential. Looking for a gift? Somebody special. David Ellis, Cherry Creek. You got a black awning on the building, 3rd and Clayton at Cherry Creek. Go to davidellisjewelry.com. David's at 303-322-8779. 303-322-8779. You will be glad that you did.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. Now, back to Peter Boyles. News Talk 710 KNUS.
Open lines.
Local talk leader.
303-696-1971. Had to love that. I couldn't find anything on stolen folders, which is one of the charges. And he said, go look here, which indeed I will when the radio show's over. But one of the people that was cited is this interesting auditor. But that was good stuff. And he's going to come back ASAP. Billy's talking to him. 303-696-1971. Looking for a great selection of eyewear. My friend Alan Stack, Stack Optical. Stack Optical has been a local business here in Denver since 68. Continue to offer great personal service and extraordinary care. You have a difficult prescription, they can help you. Glasses, everything I got. Stack Optical, motorcycle glasses, prescription ski goggles, eyewear, sunners. Name it and claim it. The on-site lab is perfect for any repairs on new lenses, quick turnaround time. Stop, get your new glasses at Stack, 2233 South Monaco Parkway near South Monaco and Evans. Open by appointment only. If you call them today and ask for their $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. They are locked down. And you make the call, you pick your time or the time it works for them, you make the appointment, bring the significant other, knock on the door, and they let you in, and then they lock the door again while you're in there. 303-321-1578, stackoptical.com, stackoptical.com, stack 6 days a week, stackoptical.com. That guy was amazing. That was a good go. John Eastman is this endowed professor, and he's up at CU, and the same thing had happened to him at Chapman. Apparently is replicating itself with CU. It is interesting to hear him talk about meetings. Other people say other things. I wasn't there. I've also heard about these unsubstantiated claims that secret folders inside of the ballot counting machines. And he says, here's where to look. So as soon as the show's over, I will look. And he said hundreds of thousands of votes were stolen in Georgia. I will look. 303-696-1971. He will be coming back on the show. He's very smart. And it is interesting to see what happened at Chapman, and that was on the Kamala Harris stuff, and then in the aftermath of that. I do support him on his right to say it. What they're after him at CU, and I'm sure the pressure is on, apparently from my reading, and I'm not an expert but a reader, that at Chapman in California, when he started up on the Kamala Harris stuff, and I can relate to that, having gone through birther stuff, and so they moved on him. This is all before what happened with Donald Trump in January. Now the same thing has raised its head again.
There was a little problem, though.
There was a couple.
With Eastman, when he talked about, with all respect, when he talked about the idea of Kamala Harris, during the conversation, he also talked about the idea of there being anchor babies. yeah, well, sure. if the Constitution should be interpreted as Eastman says, anchor babies don't exist.
Yeah.
They don't exist. I'm just saying intellectually. No. I understand that, but that was a problem in the logic.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of things that I heard real quick, but you know, I wanted to hear him, and it was hard because I was on a time frame. He was very good. He's very smart. So I want him back. But the secret folder stuff was something that I spent a lot of time, and I can't find secret folders. He said, here's where to find the secret folders. But then you wonder, why did Newsmax settle if there were secret folders? And I said it the other day to Randy. We're having lunch, and I said, if you got this, why didn't you give it to Chris Ruddy? And why are we only out here now with Mike Lindell saying he has evidence? The only guy out there that says he has evidence. That was an interesting conversation. That guy's way smart. So we'll have him back. I think we're having him back Friday. Mike, we're having him back on the show Friday. So it's your turn, 303-696-1971. The kinds of things that get said are interesting. We'll see. And no, I don't do that. I don't do that sexually. I want to say that to many emailers. Dan Kaplis Law is my friend, my pal, Dan Kaplis Law Firm. The guys are the best of the best. You know, thousands of innocent people are killed and injured every year in truck accidents. And Danny's firm has been long successful track record in cases against the trucking industry, won a large jury verdict in a truck accident case in Colorado last 10 years, $25 million jury verdict, out-of-state trucking companies. And they have caused death and destruction on Colorado highways. Danny's won numerous million-dollar out-of-court settlements for his clients in truck accident cases. Kaplis, a serious firm for serious cases. Danny takes righteous cases on percentage fee basis, and it's good for people all walks of life. Call Danny if you need help, need an answer, 303-907-5003, 907-5003, 907-5003, or visit dankaplislaw.com. Last name is C-A-P-L-I-S, kaplislaw.com. All right, come into the show, 303-696-1971. Dr. Eastman was on a radio show. It was good stuff. We ran out of time. He will be back. And all the things that are written about what Giuliani said or what was said in the Oval Office, it's interesting when the vice president's chief of staff, who later starts to tell stories, and he said, well, okay. And when you get hearsay, and again, he said, she said. So Giuliani right now, I didn't get to talk to him about Giuliani. I wanted to, or about Trump himself. But that was a great interview. I know that you all had it up and everybody's mad, but it's okay. Well, that's okay. I don't know. There's both sides is getting attacked, but he'll be back. And guys like that, you got to admire. So it is your turn. The LA Times is one of the heaviest critics of Eastman. And when he got pushed out of the job at Chapman, and I asked him, is this the same thing that just happened again? Here we go. So again, we're watching this happen. I wonder, 303-696-1971, lines are open. I wonder what, I can't wait for him to come back on the show. I wish he could have stayed. The LA Times, all these different news, he wrote for Newsweek, and he wrote a piece in Newsweek that I read about Kamala Harris wasn't qualified. And having been through birther stuff myself, but she's an anchor. And when you think about it, you know, people fly here nonstop from Korea. They have kids. They cross from Mexico, Honduras. They have a kid, and the kid anchors it. And, you know, when you ask the question, I wonder, I should have, because it would have been interesting to talk about Obama, because the claim is Obama's father is African, but I don't think his father is. I don't think that's his real father. I think his biological father is someone else, Frank Marshall Davis. He looks like Frank Marshall Davis. Now, having said those things, I went through it. So when he comes out and he starts going after Kamala Harris, and he writes a piece for Newsweek, an essay, if you would, for Newsweek, which is really the jumping off point that he starts to get heat. And guys like that are great. So whatever you want to say, I can't wait for him to come back on a radio show, email. That's not nonsense. He said suspense folders that he characterizes as secret folders. Well, we're going to look for it. because I can't find it.
Well, if it's the suspense folders that I think he's talking about, those are things that are referred to in the instruction manuals under testing folders.
Yeah, right, I know.
And they're used to test the ballots in the machines beforehand. There's no indication that those folders can be counted with election ballots on the day of. The other thing is the procedure inside the manual and the things that are verified publicly beforehand is they do run a test batch from that suspense folder, from my reading, if it's the folder I think he's talking about, through to make sure the ballot counting is going okay. They then stand there and zero out the folder. So, and then they run a report saying, are there any ballots sitting in here inside the machine? So while inside of the manual, it says there is a folder there in which you can encapsulate ballots and hold them. From my understanding, it's used for testing, and it's been cleaned out the entire time before the election actually starts, and there's no indication that ballots from that folder can be planted inside of a regular election day count.
Well, for 2 days, I've tried to read about secret folders, which is one of the charges that was made and is carried, and I can't find anywhere that anybody can substantiate the claims of secret folders inside of these ballot counting machines. And he said, well, they're not really that. They're called suspension folders, which I will go, because I can't find anything at all except they're saying that's not true. Secret folders. All right, Frank, you're on a radio show. Good morning.
Hey, Peter. Hey, listen, I think having people like Eastman on is kind of destructive because it lends credibility to a bunch of just conspiracy theory things that have all been debunked. And it's just like Billy was saying. I mean, this stuff that I've heard the same nonsense too. And it's not, these things are not, they're for audit and testing purposes in a machine.
Well, that's
and they're
I'm,
not countable.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
he calls I them, mean, they were, he wrote a Newsweek, a bunch of, he wrote for Newsweek up until a point. But the claims that he made, and again, he's an endowed professor, he's a constitutional law scholar, but he claimed secret folders. I spent 2 days looking, Googling secret folders. I can't find anybody either side of the aisle, either side of the argument, talking about secret folders other than a few people and Eastman.
Eastman, this is what is so destructive about it, is that Eastman, because he is a constitutional law scholar, whether or not you buy his positions on the Constitution or not, he knows about it. But he doesn't have any expertise in how these machines work. He doesn't have any expertise in election law. He doesn't have any expertise in any of this stuff. And so he has unallocated.
No, you have to be cautious. He's willing to martyr himself academically on this belief system. And
sure.
I mean, and that part of it, you know, I thought a lot about him last night because I was, you know, gearing up for the interview. And he said the Chapman case was off the table, and I respected that. But in Chapman, there was a president of Chapman by the name of Donnell Struppa, Struppa, who issued a statement regarding, they say, John C. Eastman, and why they ended the agreement. And I asked him, is this the same story that's happening at CU? And I think there's a lot of similarities. And this time he's going to fight for his right. And, you know, I'm in free speech, man. It's like we can't work. And that part of it, I really applaud. I mean, he's I guess, you know, we serve at the king's pleasure and they wanted him out.
Peter, no, I get it. I mean, he has a better, I think, chance against the state institution than he would against Chapman.
Sure.
I don't think Chapman's a state
institution. It's an Orange County. It's a school in Orange County. It's a law school.
Yeah, and here's what bugs me. You're right about his willingness to martyr himself.
Okay, hang on. Let me do a quick turnaround. Yeah. I'll bring you back. 303-696-1971, as you can well imagine, we got behind all of this. The advanced hair restoration guys are here. And receding hairlines, bald spots, and thinning hair. The doctor, the surgeon is Tanya Pauls, and the highly experienced team, state-of-the-art technology is the best of the best. Advanced Hair, you always receive the highest standard of care, well beyond CDC guidelines. To celebrate all of this, it's open. They're running hard. Look at their website. It's advancedhair.com, advancedhair.com, advancedhair.com. And they're before and afters. One-day treatment, life-changing results. Your new hair is 100% guaranteed. Then you make the call, 720-459-HAIR, 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 advancedhair.com, 100% guaranteed things will grow. They are the best. One-day treatment, life-changing. Look first on the web, advancedhair.com, and then call Make a Very Confidential Private Appointment, 720-459.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. More than just headlines. This is Peter Boyles, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Interesting responses. I can't wait to have the professor back. I'm looking at my notes as I took them. And, yeah, it's great stuff. The professor said some interesting things. We listened to the entire Donald Trump quip. He said, we know that hundreds of thousands of votes. We know. Well, no, he doesn't. No one knew that. No one knows anything. And so get me these votes. So that's a presumption or assumption going in. I can't wait to talk to the professor. And the guy that they use is this guy that screwed up Michigan. He's not a credible source by anybody, but he is being used as well. We'll see. It was a really good go-round. We go back to Frank. All right, sir, we got about 4 minutes.
Yeah, Peter, I'll make it quick. I agree he's willing to martyr himself. And to me, a martyr is a fanatic who's willing to act out. And you have plenty of people out there who are fanatics and who, in the face of all evidence to the contrary, they would go to the most farthest leap they could possibly come to support their position, you know, whether it's aliens landed and stole the election.
Well, yeah,
doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And this just fans their flame.
Well, and again, it's what there's called music to my ears, or it's called a belief system. And that, you know, I loved having the guy on. I can't wait to have him back. But that echoed with the kinds of things that are being said this morning, or just you can't read them on the air, but that's okay. That's the give and take of this. But I'm looking at my notes of things that he said, and the whole Trump quote is Trump says, I know hundreds of thousands have been stolen. Find me these. And so everybody just plays that find me these. But he says in advance, and then the Giuliani thing, and Eastman's on the stage with Giuliani, and they fire the crowd up. And I don't think I don't think Eastman has... I mean, I truly don't believe Eastman's saying, go get them. I don't believe that. Giuliani's interesting. There were Roger Stone talked about putting heads on pikes. I've read that.
Sure.
I mean, but, you know, the role in all, I think Eastman's probably being unjustly treated at CU. But I think it has.
I think so. Yeah, I don't doubt that.
I think
that faculty up there witch hunt anybody of any sort of conservative bent.
Sure.
I'm fully in support of him in that regard.
I don't. No, he's way smart.
I would like to invite people to actually look at what's going to shake out in the lawsuits, because that's actually where evidence is going to be generated and where people are going to run to the exits to settle. That's where the actual provable evidence exists, in these statements.
Yeah. I had a great lunch with Randy, and they're coming in on Friday. I'm getting dispensation to have someone else come on, and Eastman's coming on. I love the fight. But if we're down to a guy who sells pillows on television is the only guy that says he has evidence, and this stuff that Eastman was doing, and I'm looking back, and he's a brilliant guy. I mean, he's a linguistic arguer. He's a good one. But the things that they were saying, like using this guy out of Michigan, that guy, he's not the right guy. I mean, he's by no stretch of the imagination. And the Trump quote... But what happened in the Oval Office, and there's other people telling other stories, and one of them is former Vice President Donald Pence's chief of staff tells stories about what was going on in the Oval Office prior to January the 6th. And he, you know, Eastman, rightfully so, because it's his job, takes that guy out. Okay. Nevertheless,
sure.
I mean, all these kinds of things. And like I said, if everybody had the real evidence, why didn't they call Chris Ruddy at Newsmax and say, come on, let's win this thing?
But the real evidence is what Dominion knows exists.
Oh, sure.
Because they don't bring these suits
if they thought there was any
chink in their armor whatsoever.
I agree.
And there isn't.
when Newsmax, you know, and Randy and I talked about the money part of it, they both agreed that there was a settlement. Now, what was the amount? Maybe we'll know, maybe we'll never know. But Fox News is, you know, I've talked to smart people. We're trying to get this professor on from Michigan to talk about this. But, again, I really liked it, and I do think he's being jobbed up at CU. But, you know, having been in this business a long time, you can get jobbed for a lot of stuff. But one thing is, I think when in academia today, they cannot tolerate somebody like Eastman. He has to go.
Yeah.
And I know, if I were – as much as I disagree with him, I really love talking to him because he's smart. At the same time, if they said, Peter, what's your vote? I said, no, he stays at CU. And, you know, and just there, if nothing else, to, you know, keep a thumb in her eye. We'll do it tomorrow. All right, Frank. It was a great show. Thank you, Professor. And thanks, Randy, for setting that up. But there's a lot of holes in that, and so I go back to the drawing board. Billy Thorpe, thank you. We angered up a lot of people. You're not listening to other callers. Well, they didn't call the show. I can't manufacture a call. All right, everybody. Take care of yourself. And I love you with this. Mike Lindell has it all. I wish the hell he'd hurry up and show it to everybody. Take care, everybody. See you at Stephens this afternoon. Happy Cinco de Mayo.